Blog Talk Radio.
Do you want to explain?
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Well, that was clunky. Hello, everyone. If you stuck with us through all that, we need a new producer. The guy we have now is old and getting dementia or something. I'm not quite sure what the deal is, but welcome. Pulse of the Pack here on eve of the Packers offseason workouts. They begin tomorrow, April 8th, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and there should be a lot to talk about after tomorrow hits. I am your host this evening, this afternoon. I am Jacob Westendorf. I am enjoying a fantastic beatdown of the Baltimore Orioles by the New York Yankees, and actually have changed the channel at this point to get to the Milwaukee Brewers, who are currently shutting out the Chicago Cubs and placing a firm stranglehold early on the National League Central and confirming what we already knew, and that is that Wisconsin is far superior to Illinois in every facet whatsoever, and now that includes Major League Baseball. Joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. And Jason, how are we doing?
So I am the old producer of that clunky intro, and for the first time ever, I think, I'm just going to put our platform, Blog Talk Radio, on blast and say, you've been awful for a long time. You can do way better. So if any of the robots or the spies at Blog Talk Radio are listening in right now, I just want to make sure that you know you're driving me nuts, and be better. Be a lot better. That's the nice way I'm going to put it there. For years, I've worked on this platform, and for years, it has been exactly what you said, Jacob. Clunky. I'm doing great. It's a nice sunny day here in the Phoenix locale. Packers football starts for, I guess, all intents and purposes, tomorrow, Monday. And, yes, there'll be a lot to talk about then. But before we get to that, obviously, still a lot to go through. And we're kind of picking up the story of and everything that came out last week on the tail end of it. But I've heard some really good takes on it, and I'm kind of excited to dive into it yet again.
Yeah, Thursday was a pretty quiet day in Green Bay, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, of course. Tyler Dunn, formerly of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and now currently of Bleacher Report, posted an investigative report on the Green Bay Packers, and it was asked, you know, what happened in Green Bay? And I always think the anatomy of stuff like this, the way everything works out once a story like this is published, is funny. The Cliff Notes versions of these stories are funny. My advice in general on a story like this, I didn't have an opinion on it until I had read it a second and a third time. Because once you read it through the first time, there's emotion that hits you, obviously. A lot of people that are reading it probably have some form of emotion attached to it, whether it's a Packers fan or somebody that does not like the Packers or somebody that works for the national media. And, hey, for a media member, this is juicy stuff. I mean, I can tell you this story came out around 8 o'clock, 8 or 9 o'clock Central Time. And for the rest of that day and the following day, all the radio stations that I listen to talk about. Now, I listen to national radio, so the Packers being in the national spotlight, I joked with my wife on Thursday night. I'm like, I miss when we were boring like, this stuff is kind of embarrassing to talk about in front of everybody. Everybody's talking about how dysfunctional the Packers are and how horrible it is, those types of things. But a lot in there. Jason, I assume you have been through this story once or twice. Did you have general thoughts? Take us through, like, how many times did you read the story? Did you go through the range of emotions, all that sort of stuff? What was it like going through this process, I guess, of getting that story read and reacted to?
I've read it twice. And yes, I went through the range of emotions. I mean, some of the stuff I heard kind of pissed me off just at face value, because I feel like it's probably true. Some of it was old, regurgitated information. Everybody has been pounding some of the sources that Tyler did name in his story, which namely were Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley. We've heard nothing short of a ton from both of those guys over the past 5 years. And a lot of that stuff was not new as of this past week. A lot of it was stuff we should already know. Everyone's piling on both of them and saying that they're trashing Rodgers. And to an extent, I think that at one time, Greg Jennings did tune in, and I think he's kind of come around to a place where he's trying to be factual and fair about it. JerMichael Finley, he's a different breed. And so you just kind of have to, you know, folks, take these things with their grain of salt. Understand who these guys are, and then just, you know, when you hear what they have to say, just realize that there's a consistency in what it is that they say and how they say it. So we shouldn't act surprised and get upset when they have things to say that we don't love to hear about the Packers, about McCarthy, about Aaron Rodgers. By the way, our own Zach Jacobson put up a host of an interview that Finley did years ago when he was in the locker room talking about how Aaron Rodgers was a leader. Now all of a sudden, Finley's saying he's not. So, you know, listen, everybody needs to do what they have to do in life to pay the bills, feed their ego, keep themselves happy, stay relevant. I think a lot of that was this. I mean, Jake, there's a lot to go through, so I'm sure we're going to kind of piece it, you know, piece by piece, or maybe we're going to focus on different sections of it. I'll be honest with you. I've come down off of reading it the first time, and I really am – I don't have a ton of emotion for it right now. I mean, you know what? Tyler done great job, and I know Tyler. He's a great guy. I'm happy for him. He did a lot of work on this. And I think a lot of it is on the up and up. All of it's probably on the up and up. He's a good journalist, and he knows what he's doing. But I just – the season is about to start. The team's going in a different direction. If there's anything we can be thankful for, it's that some of these players are not on this team anymore. And I think this is going to go away really quickly once tomorrow starts and the season actually starts. This was just kind of something that hit. There's no football, so it gets blown up. That's kind of my initial take on the whole thing.
Yeah, mine immediately was just to kind of take it in a little bit and then, you know, check out what all has happened and try and realize, is there anything new that I had learned in that story? And the answer to that initially was no. I mean, we kind of knew that Rodgers and McCarthy had some tension, and I think that that's normal between two hyper-competitive alpha male types. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have tensions. Sean Payton and Drew Brees have tension. Ben Roethlisberger and Todd Haley. I can't use Mike Tomlin because Tomlin's not an offensive guy, but they had tension. I'm sure Ben and Tomlin have tension. There's plenty of examples of stuff like that. Troy Aikman, of all people, once said on a broadcast, you know, this stuff's normal for people to have intense conversations and such on the sidelines after a series doesn't go their way. We've seen Tom Brady blow up at Josh McDaniels and Bill O'Brien on the sidelines and F-bomb this and F-bomb that, and then they're hugging it out in a little bit. I am a believer, and I always have been, and it makes perfect sense. Winning masks everything. And I think that that's what happened in Green Bay for a while, is maybe these two guys weren't the best of friends. And ultimately, what happened was they stopped winning. And when you stop winning, your frustrations with each other become even more amplified. I mean, Jason, I don't want to liken this the way that it is, but we've both been married, so you know how it is. When things are going good, the stuff that frustrates you about the other individual just doesn't matter that much. And then when things go poor, the smallest little thing can annoy the hell out of you. I think that's what happened with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. I also think that something that is true regardless of what has come out about this story since it aired on Thursday is Mark Murphy, Mike McCarthy, Ted Thompson, and Aaron Rodgers, among everybody else, but those are the big four, all share some sort of blame for the fact that the Packers have not won a Super Bowl since 2010. I don't think that you can absolve anybody from that criticism. And I also think that this story is a perfect way for people to confirm some of the biases they already have. If you think Mike McCarthy sucks, this is the story you can point to. And you can be like, see, he was getting massages. Aaron Rodgers thinks he's an idiot. Everybody thinks he's stupid. Why was he the head coach for so long? You can point to this story. If you think Aaron Rodgers is a jerk and a diva, you can point to this story and say, hey, he threw his own coach under the bus and he throws his teammates under the bus all the time and blah, blah, blah. And you point to that. You hate Ted Thompson. He was falling asleep in meetings. You hate Mark Murphy. Where the hell was he through this whole time? Which is funny because, Jason, we talked about this last year when Mark Murphy changed the structure that has been the case in Green Bay to where the head coach and the general manager now all report to him. Doesn't it make sense now, after reading that story and seeing, even if some of the stuff is not true, doesn't it make sense as to why he changed that structure? And you've got people asking after this story, oh, where was Mark Murphy? Well, now the people that were asking where was Mark Murphy are the same ones that were complaining that he could overmeddle. Can't have it both ways, guys. Mark Murphy's either going to be the guy that everybody reports to, or he's going to be the hands-off guy. And when he's the hands-off guy like that, that can lead to some of the stuff like this. And it's some stuff that we've talked about before. You know, we can talk about how this is a conversation that should have taken place a long time ago about, you know, did Ted Thompson stick around for too long? I think the answer to that question is yes, for health reasons, and he just wasn't as good at his job as he used to be. Mike McCarthy, did he stick around for too long? I think at minimum, you can argue very strongly, and I would agree with you, that last season was a waste of everybody's time. Basically, last year was, okay, we can go to the Super Bowl, and then Mike can save his job that way, or we're going to fire him. And I said it as soon as I love Mike McCarthy. I've talked about this before. I think he's a really good coach, even despite some of the stuff that came out. But I definitely think that once you change the general manager, the writing was on the wall. For example, Jason, if we go back to the last general managers, Ted Thompson was hired. And they went 4-12 one year and fired Mike Sherman the next. That year was a waste of time. There was no sense in it. As soon as you change the general manager, you might as well change the head coach. Unless, like in Baltimore this year, for example, the head coach's contract was expiring, and essentially the Ravens could pick with Eric DaCosta instead of Ozzie Newsome if they wanted to move on or if they wanted to go with a head coach. But it wasn't a shotgun wedding, so to speak, with that head coach. So I go through all that and I say, yeah, some of the stuff of this story has certainly been disputed since it came out. So let's dive into a few of those things. The first bit, and we'll kind of go piece by piece with the guys. First of all, let's start with Ted Thompson because he wasn't mentioned a lot in the story, which I thought was a little interesting, but not a lot of mention of him. There was a discussion about how he was falling asleep in meetings. You know, they lamented his lack of use of veteran free agency, kind of the basic talking points that you hit when discussing the faults of Ted Thompson. But, Jason, I mean, knowing what we know that Ted Thompson was removed from his role because the Packers had a bad year in 2018, and there was a mention of poor visual, like, optics, essentially. And a lot of people have led that to believe there was a snippet of Ted Thompson that surfaced on the Christmas Eve game against the Vikings 2 years ago. And he's just basically looking like completely lost staring into nowhere. And it looked poor. Ted looked like he wasn't healthy, all those sorts of things. Do you think this is something that obviously you wish Mark Murphy caught it before, but is this something that further proves maybe that Ted Thompson should have been reassigned sooner than he ultimately was?
I think it's easy to say that. Now, the whole health thing, like we've addressed this before, and I know you work in the field. People that want to throw out the D word and make comments like that, obviously it's below board and we're not down with that, and that's not what we're here to do. The Packers tend to kind of move very slowly, and they do things the way that they do, which is they try to, you know, I'm going to say this, and then everyone's going to immediately start to point to what happened to McCarthy to refute it, but they try to save face, and they try to do right by the individual and make everything look good for the franchise. They want to try to let the person on the way out look good and make the team look good. And then I know, obviously, they fire McCarthy midseason. He's 13 years in. It looks bad, and everybody's harping on how the team totally dogged McCarthy doing that. Ted had a style to the way that he approached things, and when he was in his role, and I think it's pretty much verified now, okay, he's dealing with some health issues. I'm not going to speculate into what those are. But before those happened, Ted had a style. It was frustrating at times. He didn't always bring free agents in, and he wasn't very involved with the day-to-day team operations. He very much was into scouting, looking at film, on the road, checking out players. And he wasn't the one getting in front of the microphone when there were things going on that were big with the team. You know, after the season ended, it was widely known. Ted couldn't wait to get on a plane and go start scouting players and talking to players while Mike McCarthy was the one standing in front of reporters answering questions about why another season didn't end in a championship. So, you know, Ted was good. He got this team to where he did. He brought in Charles Woodson. He helped bring in some of the other veterans that helped win that championship. They had other opportunities, didn't get it done on the field. We can't blame Ted for that. So, you know, I mean, is he the kind of guy that was going to step down? No, probably not. So I think the team had to make the decision that they did, but I think, Jacob, we're in the same camp here. I think after 2016 and the way the NFC Championship game went down, that was pretty much all the proof you needed to know that they needed a different approach. They needed a different approach to building depth, and they had to have a better plan to go into a playoff run. The assumption from 16 to 17 was they're going to be in the playoffs again, and they started 4-1 before Rodgers broke his collarbone. So they were headed to the playoffs. So the assumption is, listen, we're going to be in the playoffs again next year for the 18 billionth time in a row. We had Ladarius Gunter covering Julio Jones this past offseason. We need better. We need some fresh minds and some fresh eyes in this organization. That might have been the time to do it, I think. Maybe a year sooner.
Yeah, I think that you can make the argument that as soon as 2015, when Larry Fitzgerald ran all over the place, and we've talked about it before, I think that it's hard to say. I mean, thinking about it now, obviously hindsight is 20/20, but they could have fired McCarthy after the 2014 NFC Championship game, but I understand why they didn't. Now, having learned what I think I've learned from that exercise, which I hope I never have to learn that again, but what I think I've learned from that is if something like that happens to your team, you need to fire whoever's in charge immediately, and not necessarily as a punitive measure. To some point, yes. But a team like that is never winning again. There were some quotes in that story that basically said, you know, that Seahawks championship game defined our team. And that defined the era, the final run of Mike McCarthy there. And the Packers were never winning again. I know this would be probably unfair, too, but another example, because there's always counterarguments to it. It's like, hey, we blew a 22-7 lead in the NFC championship game. Yeah, or 19-7, I'm sorry. The counterargument to that is it was 19-7 in the NFC championship game. They were minutes away from going to the Super Bowl. So there's your counterargument. It's the same with, like, Dan Quinn in Atlanta. Because after they lose the Super Bowl, it was like, hey, we lost the 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. Well, yeah, but it was 28-3 in the Super Bowl. Like, if you name what had to have gone wrong for us to lose that, it did. There's a lot there, obviously. But that was kind of the Ted Thompson portion. You know, I don't want to go over when they should have gotten rid of him, I guess, too much. But that's rough, thinking that his health had declined enough to where he's falling asleep in meetings and stuff like that. So it's unfortunate. Obviously, Jason, you've mentioned that there's speculation now that Thompson won't be at his Packers Hall of Fame induction. We certainly wish him the best. Yeah, I'm not here for jokes about his memory and all that sort of stuff. It's not funny. Moving forward to the other stuff. Mark Murphy was a smaller piece in it. We kind of mentioned it a little bit. The big piece in there about Mark Murphy And there's some debate as to whether or not it actually has happened. Jason Wilde was on a radio show on the East Coast, and I can't remember which one, but I got a friend who lives out that way that told me about it. It was they had hired Matt LaFleur and or decided they were going to hire Matt LaFleur, and they told Aaron Rodgers, and Mark Murphy allegedly said to Rodgers, you know, don't be the problem. Don't be a problem. Make sure that you're willing to accept coaching and all of those things. So once you accept coaching, and we'll go from there. But Jason Wilde said this never happened. So that's the part that gets interesting a little bit. Jason, let me, because we kind of talked about the structure a little bit. We've talked about Mark Murphy and his need or his desire to be more involved initially. I mean, there are some things about him that I have found a little annoying. For example, when they, you know, when they introduced Matt LaFleur as the head coach, that's who I want to hear talk is Matt LaFleur. And it felt like more than half of that was Mark Murphy. And I don't want that. However, having read this story, and again, not all of it has to be true for me to believe this either, but let's revisit this structure he put into place 1 year later. Are you comfortable? Because, Jason, you might remember some of the stuff before Ron Wolf, obviously, when they changed the football structure and everything like that, and they really all did report to the board and all that sort of stuff. What's your feelings right now of the system that they have in place where Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur both report to the president?
This is a great question. It can't last like this for a long time. I don't see them making a change before the end of this season. And it concerns me because this structure is very odd for what we've seen over the last 20, 25 years in Green Bay. And I don't know that it has ever led to high results and championships. So I think winning a Super Bowl in Matt LaFleur's first season as head coach, and after what we've seen the last 2 years, would be a huge surprise and a big overachievement for this Packers team. But I think at some point you got to give the GM a chance to be the GM and run the show. And Mark Murphy's best attributes aren't running football operations. You know, if there's business to be had and there's developments to be made within the NFL and the Packers, that's what Mark Murphy is good at. And so hopefully they'll get back to a normal structure. You got Goot. He's, you know, in with LaFleur. They're, you know, LaFleur reports to Gutekunst now. They have a good relationship. A lot of this is going to be established over the next 10 months through the next season. But I don't think it can last for a long time. I thought this was meant to try to break down some of the issues this team was having, to try to avoid having some of the stuff come out and be true that we read about in this story by Tyler Dunn. Unfortunately, it did come out. Unfortunately, it did happen. And even the best franchises out there that have a great reputation, that are ironclad, are subject to bad moments. And that's exactly what 2017, 2018 are going to be for the Packers. It was just they were bad moments. And it led to Mike McCarthy getting let go. So Murphy keeps the structure. Okay. I thought that was interesting when he announced that they were going to keep it. If there was a time when he could step back and say, okay, you know, listen, if you're confident in your hire of LaFleur as head coach and you brought Gutekunst on over Elliott Wolf and Russ Ball and all the other candidates a year and a half ago, then step aside and let it be. Do you really want this to be the structure? I don't think it can stick long term, and hopefully it won't. At this season at the most, and if it's still in place after this season, we're going to be doing a show talking about how I disagree with it, and it's going to be a cause, I can tell you right now, regardless of what happens over the next year, it's going to be a cause for concern for me with this team moving forward.
I can understand that to a point. What I can also say is I don't think that since this structure has been put into place that anything has been all that different than what has happened. I mean, Packers have been more aggressive. They've signed more players. They've traded up. They've traded down. They've done a lot of different stuff. But I just don't think anything has been all that different since this structure has been put in place. I said this last offseason. You know, I don't think that, because a lot of people were worried about Russ Ball and the checkbook and all that sort of stuff too. I don't think anything's happened with that. in regards either. I think Gutekunst is in control of the roster. Russ Ball is the financial guy, and the head coach is the head coach. I don't think they're actually – like, I don't think Matt LaFleur is going into Mark Murphy's office and saying, hey, I want to make sure that we get, you know, Aaron Jones 20 carries this week. And Murphy's going, ah, you know what, we spent a lot of money on his quarterback. Make sure he throws the ball 45 times. Like, I don't have any evidence to suggest to the contrary either. Like, the Packers have – people were worried that, you know, Russ Ball was really the one in charge. And he's the finance guy. He controls the purse strings. Green Bay won't sign any big free agents. And this year they spent like $100 million on four players. So that's been squashed. They were worried about Murphy or Ball squashing something that Gutekunst has wanted to do. Nothing about that has come out. I just don't think it's a big deal. I don't think it matters that much. But I do think that I understand why Murphy changed things to say, I want to be more involved because of stuff like this. Maybe not this specifically, but stuff like this that was happening during the last 3-4 years, really since that game in Seattle 5 years ago. I understand it. And I think that Murphy just wants to have a better pulse on what's going on. But ultimately, I do think his primary focus is on the business side of things and that sort of stuff. Although I will say this too, the people that complain that Murphy doesn't have any interest in football, he put himself into the football operation. You kind of got what you wished for when you were saying stuff like that. So I don't know what – I mean, I don't know what you want other than for Green Bay to start winning again. But that's beside the point. Murphy, Thompson, obviously, are a big part of this story. The biggest stuff obviously comes to the coach and the quarterback. And the head coach, the biggest thing was that he was allegedly getting massages during – team meetings. Team meetings would start, and then McCarthy was not, he was MIA, and a rumor started. Some people said through that it wouldn't have surprised them if that rumor was started by Aaron Rodgers, that Mike McCarthy was getting a massage during a team meeting. And a lot of players have come to the defense of the head coach, well, the former head coach now, since this story has come out. I will say this, I don't know Mike McCarthy personally, obviously, but you feel like you get to know somebody when he's the head coach of your favorite football team for 13 years, the way that he was. That doesn't fit the type of person I think that he is. And that doesn't fit the type of man that I think that he is. I do think that, you know, there were discussions in there about how his wife said she was relieved that he got fired because he was checked out. And I don't know if checked out is the right word, but you could tell that in the last couple of years, it was just, he was tired. It was just a really grueling process for everybody involved over the last 2 years. The other thing I will say, though, is if this is true, that McCarthy was skipping meetings and getting massages when he was supposed to be in meetings, I will say this. I've often said that the timing of McCarthy's firing was Bush League. I didn't think it was appropriate. I didn't think there was any need to embarrass him like that. If this is true, I don't feel bad for him anymore. That's just not the right way to handle things. And if you basically checked out like that towards the end of your tenure, they could have fired you whenever, and I wouldn't have had a problem with it. They should probably let you on the plane home or something like that. But ultimately, you know, that's done and in the books. But I really struggle to see that is true. Something else that came out in there that I do struggle to see is true is that Rodgers and McCarthy never really got along and they never really liked each other. And that was because Rodgers held this grudge from when McCarthy was the offensive coordinator in San Francisco and they drafted Alex Smith, and Rodgers always held this huge grudge. I'm sure that attributed to the chip on Aaron Rodgers' shoulder. But I will also say that these guys were automatic money in the bank from 2009 until 2016, 2017, which is when they made their last playoff appearance. They were money for an offense. And if there is that much disconnect between the quarterback and the head coach for all those years, I don't think that would have been possible for that to be the case. So I struggle to see that as being true. Do I think that eventually Rodgers said some of those things that were quoted as like, oh, Mike's got the lowest IQ of any coach I ever had, I don't respect him, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I could see Rodgers saying that within the last two seasons. because things weren't going well. Like, they stopped winning. So Rodgers probably said that as a venting. People say stuff they don't mean all the time when they're venting to people. So what did you take away, Jason, from the McCarthy aspect of this story? Do you buy the massages part? Because I think that's the part that everybody's going to make jokes about for the next several years.
Yeah, I keep teetering back and forth on this. I mean, it just seems like too specific of a snippet to not be true. I don't buy that Aaron Rodgers planted that rumor. You guys talked about this on – you and Zach Jacobson talked about this on Pack-A-Day, and Zach threw in – you know, McCarthy getting massages, and I think he said in a stairwell, which was intriguing to me because I thought the story set up in his office. You know, Zach said something about a stairwell, which only adds more intrigue to the story because then obviously other things start getting assumed. I think that McCarthy being checked out is probably true, but I say that also knowing that I'm not in the building. I don't know what was going on there. And I've been in my industry for over 25 years now. And I've had relationships with bosses that have gone from sour to very good and good to very sour. And it happens. It happens across all walks of life and all industries. And it's very possible that at some point McCarthy and Rodgers just got to a point where they had differences of opinion in how their team was going to win. They both got to a championship, and then they both have been trying to get back to one. And since then, they probably have different takes on how it's going to work. You know, Rodgers is in the locker room around the players all the time and sees what the guys are doing and not doing. McCarthy's never been the huge, I'm in the locker room all the time, like Mike Tomlin, like Sean McVay and some of those other guys. It's just not the way that he works. So I do think that, you know, the whole not being there for him not being there for meetings, take away the reason why, that alone is enough to piss me off. I was really disappointed to read that. As a leader, you've got to show that you're holding accountable, you're inspecting what you expect. You know, inspect what you expect is what I've heard several times in my career. And Mike McCarthy stopped doing that. So your quality control is out the door. And for a guy who talked about the analytics and the numbers and wanting to break that down and use that to the best of his advantage to try to plan his team's workouts, dieting, scheduling, that's just disappointing. You're a hypocrite at that point. And this team completely checked out on him. So it's really not hard to see why it happened. You know, McCarthy, the part about him talking about one thing and doing another was really disappointing to come to light, because at one point – that wasn't who he was. He changed. He became someone else. And maybe that was because he was so frustrated that everybody was listening to Rodgers. Nobody was listening to him. Rodgers was doing whatever he wanted and not getting held accountable for it by this new power structure. And his hands were tied, and he couldn't do what he wanted to do about it. So he finally said, you know what? My days are numbered here. Screw it. I got to live life and do what I got to do to survive here. That's about all I kind of took from it. And again, I preface anything I say about Mike McCarthy from this point forward with he's gone. He's not there anymore. I don't think it's going to fix everything and make everything better. But the one good thing we can say is through all this drama and all this crap that came up last week and all the fights that have gone on Twitter and, you know, to that effect, people just be good to one another. You know, I mean, it's just the fighting that goes on and the arguing and people just, you're always going to have the faction of people who never liked McCarthy. And now, you know, his house is on fire and they wouldn't even piss on it to try to put that flame out. And then you've got the other people who, you know, Mike McCarthy winning a championship basically absolves him of murder if he shoots somebody. And I'm being very dramatic there in that example, but that's just kind of the way the world works. Just realize you're not going to win every argument. And he's not the head coach of the Packers anymore, and it's time to move forward. But disappointing look for McCarthy. He definitely changed over the years. And unfortunately, at the end of his tenure, you know, wasn't for the better, and it didn't have this team as competitive as I think they could have been.
No, it didn't. And, you know, that's unfortunate for a lot of reasons. Another thing it really made me realize is that Bill Belichick is a robot, because he's pretty much the same person that he was 15 years ago, or however the hell long it's been since the Patriots hired him. The other big one, obviously, like I mentioned, was the quarterback. Something else before I move on to that, I will say this, whether I know I've said on this show before, I am thinking it will be future Minnesota Vikings or Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike McCarthy. I believe now, whether it's fair or not, this story is going to follow him a little bit. And I believe McCarthy already had a few strikes against him in terms of getting another job. He's older. His offense certainly isn't seen as innovative. And he has said he's going to call plays as long as he's a head coach. The Jets and the Browns were willing to hire him if he was willing to let their offensive coordinators call plays. And McCarthy was not willing to do that, which I understand. I wouldn't want to go into a shotgun marriage with that either. But at the same time, those strikes are already against him. The league is trending. You saw it this year. Everybody's making jokes about it. How, you know, do you know Sean McVay? Are you young? And are you an offensive coach? I mean, Vic Fangio really bucks the trend. But otherwise, every coach that was hired, or most every coach that was hired this offseason, Fangio and Flores are the only two. But the others were young offensive coaches. And McCarthy, he's not old in terms of, like, real life, but he's old in terms of football coach. And he's offensive-minded, but again, his offense, everybody's throwing those words, stale, archaic, not innovative, unimaginative. You name those words. Those are all against him. I throw all that in there to say I don't think Mike McCarthy is getting another job. Between that, you've got the story that came out this offseason about him berating a high school official, which I think is a little ridiculous that I could follow him, but it probably doesn't help. I don't know if it may not hurt him, but it definitely doesn't help him. And then this story comes out about how he allegedly was, again, skipping team meetings for massages and various other things. So I don't think Mike McCarthy is going to be a coach in the NFL again. Whether that's fair or not, doesn't really matter. That's just that's what I'm guessing for now. My opinion is always subject to change. The quarterback is the other big part of this story. Aaron Rodgers. A lot in here. Some stuff, again, we already knew. Let me start by saying this. Because a lot of people saying, oh, Rodgers looks terrible. He looks like this huge egomaniac. Well, he's an NFL quarterback. Players, and especially quarterbacks, are egomaniacs. And don't throw me the Tom Brady and the Drew Brees and all those examples. Those guys have egos too. That's how they're able to play at the highest professional level. People that are Favre fans always say that, oh, Favre didn't have an ego. Yes, the hell he did. He had his own damn dressing room by the time he was towards the end of his career, and especially in the last year with Mike Sherman, which is something else I pointed out, Jason. Twitter obviously wasn't around back then, but I do wonder and actually tend to believe this story could have been written in 2005 and just changed the names from McCarthy and Rodgers to Favre and Sherman. And I wouldn't struggle to believe that at all, that maybe not the same exact circumstances, but just the same idea of things. Favre got a little too cavalier. Rodgers got a little too cavalier. Rodgers freelances too much. Favre freelances too much. Blah, blah, blah. Moving forward on that, some stuff in there was a little disturbing. The idea that, you know, Rodgers is changing plays in the huddle, going rogue a little bit with some of the plays that were called, freezing out, allegedly, MVS in the offense because he wasn't doing what he told him to. Some of that stuff, I think Rodgers, and again, we'll see if this is true or not coming into this year, but, you know, Rodgers has always been known to be somebody he has to trust you and that you're going to be in the right spot and all that stuff to get you the ball. And I think that that's certainly fair that he has to trust his receivers to run the right routes and be in the right spots and all that stuff. And that's the other reality of the situation is we don't really know if those players were or not. They certainly look open on some of those things. But that doesn't mean that that's where they're supposed to be. So maybe Rodgers looking in a different spot. I say all that to say still, he is not absolved from criticism. Jason, we've talked about this on the show before, that I don't care if, you know, if the open player has a 17 on his chest or an 83, MBS in this case. Throw that guy the ball. You know, they talked about how Rodgers' leadership style was certain ways, and that didn't fit with certain guys. And they talked about Jeff Janis, and the other thing that came in the story, and this is really what I took away, a lot of the negative stuff came from the same two people that we always hear it from. And it was Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley. And whenever there's a negative story about Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know why people can't figure this out, it seems like those are the two guys that are quoted the most. And I did think it was funny because there's a lot of stuff in there about Finley saying, oh, Rodgers is entitled and he's this, you know, mega $1 million, the CEO, he runs the whole franchise and he's a diva and blah, blah, blah. And then you've got Adam Schein, who plays a soundbite from Finley's interview at the Super Bowl that says, oh, no, Rodgers loves to be coached. You know, he doesn't always like what the coaches are doing, but, you know, he loves to be coached. That's what he wants. And in the story, it's, oh, no, Rodgers doesn't like to be coached. He wants to do whatever the hell he wants, whenever the hell he wants. So, again, you can believe that there's negative stuff about Aaron Rodgers, and there is, because there is with every quarterback. Every person has negative stuff about them. However, me, and I did this the first time I read the story, too, anything from Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley, I take with the biggest grain of salt. It's very clear that those guys have access to grind with the quarterback, and that's fine. I'm not sure what all happened between those guys and their relationship. I'm sure they have some reasons for why they're allowed or why they're able and willing to speak like that about him, and that's fine. But I also know that they are also smart guys and know this is how they stay relevant. How do I keep getting on TV shows? How do I get television appearances on The Herd? How do I get appearances on Undisputed? How do I get on shows like that? Well, Aaron Rodgers is still available. I can still bash him about this, that, or the other thing. So I take those with a grain of salt. Now, is Rodgers absolved from criticism in this? No. He played poorly last year. I'm sure there was a way that he could have resolved the issues with Mike McCarthy. I don't want to get into the stuff about his family. The family stuff obviously was mentioned in that story as well. Again, I maintain that's nobody's business. What Rodgers' reasons are for cutting them off doesn't matter. It's not our family. It's not our business. I mean, Rodgers allegedly had cut his family off when he had his MVP season in 2014. And was an MVP-level player in 2016. So that stuff doesn't matter that much to me. Jason, before we get to, like, the final point on this, what was your takeaway here regarding Aaron Rodgers and some of the stuff he did? Was there anything that was overly disturbing or I should say anything that was mentioned that was overly disturbing? And then we'll go to, like, moving forward from it.
I wouldn't say disturbing from, like, a snippet standpoint. The only thing that concerns me with Rodgers is he going to settle into this new offense that he's going to be a part of? So when LaFleur implements it and the key is the tight end, the key is an underneath route, the key is a check down, the key is a short intermediate pass to the middle of the field, is he going to go to it? Or are we going to see the same bad habits manifest themselves that we saw this past season, dancing in the pocket? I won't say seeing ghosts, because I don't think that's what he saw. He just holds on to the ball. Like, those are the things that concern me more than these personality things. I mean, you've got, over the number of years that he's played, that his play on the field is worth whatever he's doing in the locker room. And when you've got guys coming to his defense that we trust, T.J. Lang, James Jones, Hayward, you know, legitimate sources and guys that will back him up. Haha, Clinton Dix just earlier today came out and was lambasting the players that had negative things to say about this team. You know, used some very colorful language to describe them because they wanted to stay relevant or they wanted to stick their nose out there. You know, I think there's much ado about nothing in terms of Rodgers the person. I don't care what kind of relationship he has with his family. I don't care what's going on with Danica Patrick. I don't care how pouty he looks on the sideline. He wants to win games. He's competitive. And I know that he does. He wants to win games. Matt LaFleur wants to win games. Mike Murphy needs the team to win games. Otherwise, he's not going to get his business deals. He's not going to expand Titletown District. he's not going to fill Lambeau Field. Well, I mean, I guess that's not true since there's a waiting list a mile long, several hundred miles long for the Pack to fill up that stadium. But that just let them stick, get to winning and let them get to they do best. You know, our concern shouldn't be how Aaron Rodgers, you know, we gave Jay Cutler so much crap for how he looked on the sideline, but we're Packers fans and we don't like the Bears. That was fun to do. Smoking Jay Cutler and all of his, you know, laissez-faire faces and his attitude, and we love that. It was funny. But in reality, what sunk Jay Cutler? It was what Jay Cutler did do on the field and did not do on the field. Aaron Rodgers can still do a lot. That's what we need to focus on. I don't care about all these other things that may have happened or may not have happened. You know, everyone's human. You can't expect everyone to be perfect in every situation. And, you know, if you mention it, because there was a lot there, and I was trying to find something while you were talking, so if I missed this, you know, my apologies for repeating it. But I keep going back to what you and Zach talked about on Pack-A-Day. Tom Brady walked around before the Super Bowl and was pounding his chest and talking about how he was the greatest ever and he's the greatest quarterback. Good. That's what you want. You need that. If I'm getting ready to play in a Super Bowl, I want the most important player on my team who's going to touch the ball on every snap and is going to control where that ball goes to believe he's invincible. I want to win a ring. I want a trophy. I want my legacy. I want success. I want all of the injuries and the poundings and the literally the blood, sweat, and tears that I put into this past season to be worth a shit. So, yes, Aaron Rodgers is arrogant. Good. We need that. Let's move on and hope that he settles into this offense and can play within it. I'm excited, Jacob, once we get into, like, when the team starts installing and we start learning a little bit more about the type of offense they're going to have once the draft is over and we know the players and we know who's going to be a part of this offense, talking about whether or not – what I'd rather talk about is whether or not Aaron Rodgers is going to settle down and play within the damn offense. That's my biggest concern versus all this other crap.
Yeah, I think that's valid, you know, a valid concern. I think that, you know, that's part of what did Rodgers in last year was a inability, unwillingness, whatever you want to call it, to play within the offense. And Rodgers has always been at his best. I know he's really good at extending plays and making big plays down the field, but he really always has been his best when the ball's coming out of his hands quick. He's throwing the ball on time. Those sorts of things, I think, matter. That's something Matt LaFleur even talked about. He said he was going to show his players, he called it a routine play from the Jets game in 2010. Rodgers stares down the barrel that comes free and delivers a strike to Jordy Nelson as he's going to get hit. Instead of trying to escape, run around and play, you know, sandlot ball, he was able to just make a routine play. And that's something that LaFleur wants. I do think that it is telling that Rodgers has had, McCarthy too, not just Rodgers, has had countless teammates come to his support. You know, James Jones, almost right after the story, Jordy Nelson, Casey Hayward, Jermaine Whitehead, Morgan Burnett, Randall Cobb hasn't said anything, but, I mean, Randall Cobb was one of Rodgers' best friends. I'm sure we know how he feels about in this situation. John Kuhn, players current and former, people that have nothing to gain. J-Ron Elliott today, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix today. Ha-Ha Clinton Dix plays for a damn rival at this point. Don't you think bashing Aaron Rodgers would endear him to his new fan base? Instead, they're coming out and saying a lot of things like that. I think that that's telling. I do think it's funny that the people who want to believe these things and want this stuff to happen, and again, I'm not absolving Rodgers from criticism, but they're willing to believe the same two people that quite clearly have an axe to grind, and they ignore the fact that, you know, Tom Crabtree came out the other day and basically Casey Hayward said the same thing. Now I'll let you guys connect the dots and figure out who they're talking about, but they said they're one of those two guys that came out and said something. They have no room to talk about being a bad teammate. So there's two guys saying that also. Why does that not get talked about? Why is that not a big deal? Why is that not some big revelation about what kind of person these guys are? It's been a really strange road. You would think for Aaron Rodgers, since he's become the starting quarterback in Green Bay, you would think by this point he would be universally loved by his fan base. And to some degree, that's not true. There are people within the fan base that absolutely want to believe these things and believe worse. about the player. Why? Because he's not Brett Favre. And, you know, like I mentioned yesterday, Pack-a-day, you know, Brett Favre was a great player. Did a lot of good things in Green Bay. There's no question from what we know in the public eye. Now, I say that very explicitly. From what we know and what has been made public, who is a better person between those two guys? And it's not Brett Favre. That's just reality, guys. That's how I feel. Moving forward, so that is the last we're going to talk about this. The last we're going to talk about the McCarthy era. The last we're going to talk about what Aaron Rodgers did in 2018 and before. The last we're going to talk about Ted Thompson and all that stuff. What we're doing now is we're moving forward. What I will say is this for the quarterback. The buck stops right here because he's the only one left. Nobody's going to make him a martyr anymore. Nobody's going to say he's being held back by this buffoon of a head coach. Nobody's going to say that the Packers haven't done everything they can to put a championship team around him. They spent a ton of money on their defensive free agency. They spent on offensive linemen. They're trying to get back to a championship level. We'll see how they do in the draft, what they do in the draft. They've done a lot for him. You want to make this go away? The way that you make this go away is you play MVP-level quarterback again and get the Packers back to the playoffs and maybe another Super Bowl. That's how this all goes away, is if you do something like that. You play poorly again, you have the poor body language, you throw your hands up as the what the hell was that kind of thing at your head coach. These sorts of questions are just going to continue to surface and continue to be a thing. And knowing Rodgers, what we know about him is Rodgers doesn't like to be in the public eye. And we've talked about this before. He thinks it's weird that he can't go in public and, you know, people all want to talk to him and see him and blah, blah, blah. Rodgers just isn't like that. He doesn't love being in the limelight. So if you want to get out of the limelight from a negative fact, go win. That's how you do it. Jason, anything else to add before we move forward?
I guess that's a great way to put it. I feel like I spend a lot of time on here trying to justify my, so that when I tweet about it, I'm staying consistent and that everyone can hold me accountable to it. And I think I've done a good job because nobody's ever said, hey, that's not what you said on a previous show. We've got to, I guess, decide if you're going to care what these guys do off the field versus on the field. And I'm not talking about egregious crimes like Adrian Peterson and, you know, Kareem Hunt and some of these other players have committed that are calling to the forefront just very egregious acts of violence and just disrespect and to their family or to their loved ones. It's about what this team does from this point forward. I'll end it by saying that whether you liked it or not, we have to own the fact that it's a bad look for the Packers. Not everything in that article can be dismissed. You don't have to believe any of it, but again, the source is pretty credible. I have a lot of respect for Tyler Dunn. I've met him before. I've interacted with him. He's a good guy. He's come up through the ranks. You know, I remember when Tyler was an intern on scout.com with Bill Huber, and he was just getting his way through college at Syracuse, and then he came up and became a beat reporter in Green Bay, and now he was with, you know, Gannett USA Today for a while, and now he's with Bleacher Report. You know, he doesn't have an axe to grind. There's no issue with his time in Green Bay. This is just a story that he pursued and wanted to get after, and it's not a great look, but it's time for the, you know, so we don't love it. It's a black mark on this very proud franchise and a proud fan base, but now we move forward. And Matt LaFleur's got a chance to kind of, you know, I mean, if anything, you know, I don't think he needs to look at this and get involved in it. You know, you need to stay as far away from the drama as possible, but maybe this gives a little bit of insight into how you manage an Aaron Rodgers and you manage a roster and you manage your expectations. You know, starting tomorrow, because we're recording this on Sunday, Matt LaFleur's culture starts in Green Bay. It starts tomorrow. I mean, these next 5 months are going to be absolutely critical in this entire era, whether Matt LaFleur is here for 1 year or if he's here for 10, these next 5 months are going to be critical in establishing who he is and how he's going to run this team and what his expectations are. And spoiler alert, you might read a little bit more about my thoughts on that tomorrow morning at Cheesehead TV, because that's such a big, maybe underrated thing that, you know, everyone wants to know, how's the offense going to look? What are the players going to be? What's the scheme going to be? How are you going to use the tight ends? What's the defense going to be? What's Pettin going to do? The culture. Set the culture, and that's the first thing that needs to happen. So, yeah, we can put this behind us, Jacob, and move forward next chapter. And, you know, I guess that means back to some of the draft talk and maybe some late free agency stuff, which is the actual football part of it, and I could not be more glad that it's here.
That's right. Football is here. Monday, April 8th, the off-season program begins. There could be some discussion as to who is in camp. There may be some discussion as to who's not there. There are still some potential free agents that are available. We've talked about Trey Boston. Eric Berry's name has surfaced. Ziggy Ansah has surfaced. And Ndamukong Suh's name has come up. Not in connection to the Packers, but just kind of in general as players that are still out there that can help teams. And I don't know if the Packers will be bringing any of them in. I do know that, you know, there is precedence for that. A few years ago, Jari Evans was signed like the day of or the night before. I can't remember which, but either the day of the draft or the day before the draft, they signed Jari Evans. That's something they could do. I do know that with each day that passes, and as of right now, we're about 19 days away from the NFL draft. And with each day that passes, the more likely it is that those players are going to be waiting until after the draft to find a team. So I don't know if the Packers are going to be doing any more shopping. They certainly could. You know, that they heard about a free agent visit recently with a gentleman named Rodney Gunter. Not to be confused with Ladarius Gunter. He's a defensive lineman. Had a good year last year. He visited earlier this week with the Packers. Nothing has surfaced about whether or not they're going to sign him or what they're doing or anything like that. So we'll see if Green Bay is willing to do anything from a free agent standpoint. From the draft stuff, Jason, the draft guide is out, and that's what I want to go to. Get it. I've read through it. It's great. There's a lot of stuff in there about the end of Mike McCarthy's tenure, written by Tundra Vision, C.D. Angeli. A story on Matt LaFleur, a feature on Matt LaFleur from Michelle Bruton, a special episode of Packer Transplants with Aaron Nagler, Corey Behnke, and a special guest, I won't tell you who, and then the rankings from everybody, Tyler Grzegorek, myself, Ross Uglum, Dan Dowkey, Andy Herman, a lot of guys have done a lot of stuff, Owen Reese, Al Bracco, plenty of guys, a lot of good information in that draft guide, and it is out and available and can be downloaded to your desktop with a purchase right now. So get out there and get it. Find out. I will give you the first spoiler for everybody. The consensus among Packers Twitter appears to be TJ Hockenson as tight end one. I have somebody different in that slot, and it is Noah Fant. Go ahead and purchase the guide and find out why. I'll explain there for you. But yeah, Jason, I don't know. Do you anticipate any moves between now in the draft, or do you think the Packers are just fully in draft mode? Is there anybody that you'd like to see them bring in between now and then?
Nobody to bring in, draft, and then figure out from there, because they don't have a lot of cap space. So there's just not a lot of names that are left in the pile that are going to help the Packers. I think if they're going to bring a guy in, it's probably going to be somebody that a team maybe lets go that's unexpected after their draft, and they decide that they can depart ways with somebody. So it would be kind of foolish to do it now, because there's so much more that's going to be added to the selection pool between now and after the draft, I should say. So now I'd say sit back. Just, you know, they did well for the first round. They spent a lot of money. They made a big splash. Just kind of sit back, let your draft be what it's going to be. But I'm also banking on them getting it right. And I've said many times, they've got to get it right. And I'm hoping that they do. You got two first round picks. If for no other purpose this year, whatever you do with those first two picks, whether you trade them, get more picks, or use them, you've got to get it right and you've got to nail it. And Jacob, I think you'd agree with me, if they're going to use their first round picks, and especially if they're going to use that move pick at 30 and they move up and they draft another player, we do agree 12 is that is a given. I'm talking more about the late pick. We do agree it needs to be two starters, and those players need to be big contributors this season. Am I correct?
Absolutely. I think basically what you're saying there is don't pick an offensive lineman at 12. You're hoping that guy doesn't play if you draft him, and I don't mean that to be. And not only that, like the guys you're drafting at 12 probably aren't playing left tackle. That's when I would like them to. If you're moving up for a guy and, you know, able to – your plan is for him to be your right tackle of the future, for example. Say it's Dalton Risner. Then that's possible, I think. If it's not, then, you know, there's a lot of things Green Bay can do. But I'm with you. If Green Bay is picking two guys in the first round, I would like them to be guys that are going to start or at least play a significant role. So if they pick a pass rusher at 12, for example, that guy's not going to start, but he's going to play a significant role in his first season and in the years after that, obviously. If you pick an offensive lineman early, you're hoping he doesn't start in his first year at all. And if he doesn't start, he doesn't play. And I don't want to pick a guy in the top 15 that doesn't play. So I don't think there's anybody that I just named earlier. Some intriguing names, like I mentioned, but I don't think there's anybody that they need to bring in before the draft. If you can get through the draft and find out there's a position you didn't address that you would like to, you can go that route if you want to. But nothing that they need to do, so to speak. So that'll be interesting. We're 2 weeks away from the big night. Jason, you and I will be talking at some point for those days as well, and then maybe potentially doing some stuff for TSET TV. We don't know yet at this point, but we are out of time for this version of the show. Like I mentioned, that's the end. We're not going to talk about anything from before. We're going to move forward, and everything starts by the time you're listening to the show, probably today, Monday. The off-season program begins today. Matt LaFleur's Green Bay Packers will take to the practice field for the first time since he was named the head coach. So that's exciting. He will meet Aaron Rodgers, the new coaching staff will there. There will be a lot of energy in the building, I'm sure. I look forward, I will say this, even though I just said we're not going to look back anymore, but I do look forward to the media availability just to see how that's addressed, if that's addressed. I do know that Aaron Rodgers is very good at squashing anything like that. He's been good in the past about those things, so I imagine that's what he will do again. But I'll be looking forward to that tomorrow as well. But that's going to do it for this edition. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. Follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. And you can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. We are closer to the draft. Like I mentioned earlier, get that TSET TV draft guide. It's a little more expensive now if you waited too long and you're a procrastinator like me, but that's just fine. Go ahead and grab it. It'll be right in your email. Download it right to your desktop. Read it. A lot of great people in there. The draft is 2 weeks away. That will be exciting. But until then, we will see you guys probably at least one or two more times before that day hits. Thank you, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.